In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs.
We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole, so it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command.
They make the laws
to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now.
From the men of property the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, only the vision lingers on.
You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is climate activists talking about the Keystone Pipeline and divestment from fossil fuels with Tom Ashbrook.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The science on climate change gets more and more alarming. The big environmental organizations like the Sierra Club and the NRDC are lawyered up and pushing for tougher regulations on the industries and fossil fuels that heat up the planet. But a new generation of climate activists is saying, not good enough. There's a new burst of protest on college campuses, at fracking wells, along pipelines, and in the nation's capital. This hour On Point, the edgier, more urgent new face of climate activism. We'll have three young climate activists with us today. With us first from Santa Barbara, California, is Emily Williams. She's a senior at UC Santa Barbara, majoring in environmental studies, 21 years old and committed. Emily Williams, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's great to have you right there. With me in the studio is Maura Cowley, 30, executive director of the Energy Action Coalition, brings together 50 youth groups advocating for clean energy and slowing climate change, originally from Scranton, Pennsylvania, deep in coal country. country. She spent 5 years at the Sierra Club, worked as a field organizer, campaign director, national director for the Sierra Student Coalition. Now she's moved on, has been arrested twice in front of the White House while protesting the Keystone XL pipeline. Maura Cowley, good to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We'll have more voices in a moment, but let me begin with you two. Emily, you know, there's been environmentalism for a long, long time. There you are, 21, and doing it for your generation. Do you feel like you've got some special urgency, some special requirement to bring something new to it?
I mean, we certainly do. We've seen time and again that just the normal push for the environment from environmental activists before, it's not working anymore. The government isn't listening to us. The fossil fuel industries have a stranglehold on our political structure. So it's time to take another push. We see the levels of carbon dioxide raising so much. We're now at above 390 parts per million, and it's not acceptable. It's our generation that's going to be suffering the consequences and the future generations.
Let me welcome one more voice into our conversation. With me in the studio, Dorian Williams, an anthropology major and senior at Brandeis University, 21 years old, originally from Chicago, member of the Divest for Our Future campaign at Brandeis, of Students for a Just and Stable Future, and of 350 Massachusetts, part of the national group 350.org. She's been arrested 4 times. Already in protest actions. Dorian Williams, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
4 times? Arrested? In what period? Over how many years?
I guess that's about 2011.
Where have you been arrested? Doing what?
D.C., West Virginia, and most recently here in Massachusetts.
When and in what were you arrested in D.C.?
Well, D.C. was twice. The first time was a part of PowerShift 2011. We were led off a side rally of the main rally. That went to
This was in front of the Department of...
The Interior.
The Interior, okay.
Mm-hmm. So we would light off a side, and then sort of...
You're breathing a little hard from coming up the stairs. That's totally fine. We're glad you're here. So what, you got pushed into the lobby of the Department of Interior?
Yeah, we stormed the lobby, filled it with people and instruments and...
Musical instruments?
Musical instruments.
Okay.
Drums, trombones. It was really quite the experience, and started out with maybe 50-plus people, and then there was 21 of us at the end of the police warnings, and they took us off. And the reason that we were at the Department of the Interior was because they oversee a lot of the siting and permitting for things like mountaintop removal, things like tar sands in Utah, some offshore drilling as well. So, you know, we really wanted to take it to them and show them this is unacceptable.
Twice in Washington, you were arrested in West Virginia, I believe, chained to a big truck or something at a coal mining site.
Correct. We were at the mine site in West Virginia. We were at Hobbit Mine, the largest in West Virginia, to protest mountaintop removal. You know, what they're doing to the people of West Virginia is, I mean, they're blowing up their homes, they're blowing up those mountains, they're polluting their water, they're destroying their livelihoods. If it was a country, not a corporation doing this, we would see a very different reaction from our government. But because of the way that corporations control our government, it's left to the people to defend them.
And you were arrested protesting the Keystone XL pipeline. Where, why, how?
First time in D.C. With tar sands action and the 1,253 of us over the course of a couple weeks, and most recently in Westboro, Massachusetts, where TransCanada has an office.
New Secretary of State John Kerry has just said, I think they released the thing saying the State Department has no objection, in effect, has no environmental objection to the Keystone Pipeline, which would open the way for tar sands oil to come down from Canada. Did you expect that? You think, are we going to see a Keystone Pipeline?
I hope not, you know, but we're running out of hope with President Obama's administration. You know, Kerry used to have a really great record on environmental issues, but, you know, with this recent report, I don't have a lot of faith or trust that they will do what's right, and what's right is rejecting the Keystone XL pipeline. But if they really choose to continue ignoring the climate effects, you know, I think it's majorly, you know, a betrayal of my generation. We were a huge part of how Obama got elected, and we will bear the brunt of climate change, and this will be on our shoulders now with the Keystone XL pipeline.
I want to talk about how all that's going to unfold. People talking about the Keystone XL pipeline decision and protest as perhaps the Selma of this generation's life when it comes to environmental protest. Maura, you're only 30, but you're our senior statesman here. You've been watching this for a long time. Do you, you know, we're going to have a lot of listeners way older than that, and they'll remember environmental protests and Earth Day and green this and green that going back for decades. And they may be wondering, what is new here?
I mean, do you see something new in the quality, the perspective of protests, the nature of the protests that this generation, Dorian's and Emily's generation, is bringing to the streets?
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm seeing that's really, really new is a social justice lens on all of this work. I think historically, the environmental movement has been very tied to conservation and protecting water and protecting air, and that's very important still. But what we're also seeing is people taking a stand, getting arrested, protesting to protect other people. Right now, fossil fuel industry pollutes low-income communities and communities of color at disproportionate rates. And for our generation, that is unacceptable. It's simply unacceptable. And so this new generation of activists that we're seeing across the country emerging, they are really intent on making sure that we stop climate change and that we push forward with clean energy that's equitably distributed across the country.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Children of despair, hear their cries of pain, see their empty stare. Do you feel their torment? Have the courage now to dare. Can you feel their heartbeat? Yes, have the heart to care. Have the heart to care. The orphan children of poverty and war, millions who've been stricken with plagues from shore to shore. See the child of famine, so fragile, lost and poor, hunger-ravaged children, the children you ignore. Children you children of the world. Can you hear their heartbeat? Can you truly feel what's real? Can you sense their heartbreak? Their suffering, can you feel? Will you make a difference with compassion? Will you
Williams in California. We had Ralph Nader was in our backyard here a couple of months ago. And he said to students at Northeastern University, he was talking about your generation broadly, Emily. He said, you know, nothing changes if you don't have fire in your belly. And then he said this very tough thing on your generation. He said, you are a generation without even embers in your belly. You don't have fire in your belly. What do you say to that, Emily? Do you see evidence of fire in your generation's belly when it comes to the environment and climate?
Oh, I certainly do. I see a lot of fire in people's bellies. I think one of the problems that really has faced our generation so far is that climate change, even though it's the huge issue of our time, it's a little bit harder to put your finger on. It's not quite as tangible as, say, the social justice movements, the civil rights movements that happened before. But I think for a long time, our generation has known that something isn't right, and they've wanted to do something about it. And it's just now that there's a vessel, there's something that we can focus our attention on, something tangible that we can do.
What's wrong with the traditional environmentalist movement, if there is something wrong with it?
What's wrong with the traditional?
Well, if this generation is out to do something new and do it somehow differently, that means you're changing trails somehow. We'll look at how you're changing trails, but what about the trail that this movement's been on?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that a lot of the people that I work with and a lot of members of my generation are prepared to really see this issue for what it is. I think a lot of the big environmental groups have been avoiding, in some ways, the true costs of climate change, the human costs of climate change, and how quickly and exponentially it is going to happen. The pace that they have been moving at is incredibly slow. They've been willing to play the inside game, and we've seen that the inside game does not work. And that's why, you know, as
inside game meaning lobbying for legislation, write the congressman, ask for a higher fuel mileage and so on.
And preparing to settle for what is, in the end, not going to cut it, is not going to, you know, literally cut the carbon that we need in order to avoid 2 degrees Celsius.
If that inside game hasn't worked, what is the outside game? How do you bring an outside game to bear and change that big head of steam on energy as we know it?
Making it a public issue. I think that's what we've seen with Keystone. For the first time, we're really seeing people in the streets in the thousands, in the tens of thousands, people getting arrested in the thousands, people taking these steps and escalating to the point that we haven't seen yet with the climate movement and haven't seen in the environmental movement for an incredibly long time. And I think that we are prepared to meet with this sense of urgency the task ahead of us in a way that I think can only come from the people who know that their futures are at stake.
We're going to look at exactly what that means and what that path may look like already and in the months, years ahead. We're talking to Sarah about a harder, edgier, more urgent environmental movement with a new generation of climate activists. They see not just the planet, but their own lives and many others on the line. Bill McKibben talks a lot about it with 350.org. He's been on a campaign across the country looking to bring out students. They're coming out. Keystone Pipeline issue, bringing them out. Anais Mitchell behind us here performing Bob Dylan's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. This was a few months ago in Burlington, Vermont. That protest movement, that protest spirit in the streets. Again, you can join us this hour. Is it way too late for Earth Day? Is the urgency of climate change now calling for a different kind of protest, for taking it to the streets, to the boardrooms? We're at 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with a new generation of, don't call them environmentalists, call them climate activists. Environmentalism, admirable as it may have been, has not done the trick, not cut the mustard, they say. And a new younger generation is out to bring more urgency, more edge to environmental issues in front of us right now. Not just environmental issues, they say. These are social justice issues. These are, perhaps for their generation, survival issues. Just last month in Washington, big demonstration against the Keystone Pipeline. Here was college student David Penske explaining why he was there.
This pipeline is a symbol of the dying idea of capitalism and greed and wealth. That actually meant success. But what it actually means is death for not only our planet, but for us, for our species. And so I'm here to put a stop to it. And they talk about drawing a line in the sand. That's exactly what today is. We're 45,000 strong. And we're going to stop the Keystone. We're going to stop fracking.
The critique getting very big there. A couple months earlier, Florida A&M University Renewable Energy Conference. Some sound from that event.
Solar, that's what's up. Dirty South, clean it up.
The effect is sort of climbing up the old environmental ladder. Since its creation 120 years ago, the Sierra Club had never acted in civil disobedience. That changed when they joined a protest, that same protest in February, against the Keystone XL pipeline in front of the White House. Here's Executive Director of the Sierra Club, Michael Bruin, explaining the change in policy and his own arrest in front of the White House.
We can't win on climate change if we continue to dither, if we continue to talk about it but not do anything. And so the Sierra Club is engaging in civil disobedience for the first time because we have a moral catastrophe on our hands, and we need to do everything that we can to compel stronger, bolder action.
Big divestment movement across the country, students asking the leaders at their universities to pull college funds out of the stock shares of big energy companies, fossil fuel energy companies. Here's an Al Jazeera interview, Shihab Ratansi. Ratansi asking a Harvard student, Ali Welton, about the goal of the divestment movement running through college campuses now.
We want to stigmatize them in the same way that tobacco corporations were stigmatized by the divestment movement a few decades ago, to the point where politicians are unwilling to accept donations from tobacco corporations, or hopefully in the future fossil fuel corporations, because there's such a huge negative societal stigma attached to them.
Don't just pull the money out for the financial hit, but stigmatize those companies so they can't keep doing what they're doing. Bring on the social pressure. Emily Williams is here, Maura Cowley, Dorian Williams, and lots of callers. Joe's calling from Manchester, Connecticut. Hi, Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
Okay, what do you see?
Well, I'm going to date myself. I remember back when I was just a wee child going to one of the very first named Earth Days. And we had regular school trips a few times back in the 70s. And then and I remember seeing, you know, this was, of course, the height of NASA and everything else, the end of the space programming. I remember Skylab and all of that. And then all that positive energy as we moved into the 80s and on into the 90s just went. I remember, you know, I was dabbling in architecture, reading books, and, yeah, this is how you build energy-efficient houses. And this is back in the 70s. And for a long time, that just went away. And then recently when I was in college, SUNY at New Paltz, we actually had on campus, it was the remnants of an efficient community, you know, experimental housing.
Joe, let me ask, does it make sense to you, Joe, that this new generation would look out at the years in front of them and the kind of climate signals that we're getting and say, we can't just go on that schedule anymore. We've got to spur this thing faster, bigger.
Well, part of what I was getting at is that this current generation wouldn't be needing to do this if that momentum hadn't been quashed during the good times of the 80s and, you know, early 90s, which, you know, now in retrospect were maybe not as good. You know, we had the Generation X, the me generation, and whatnot.
Yeah, and off it went. Off went that energy, and here we are with our climate situation. I appreciate your call, Joe. Maura, do you have a sense that despite all the ongoing talk about green this and recycling and everything else, we came to a place of complacency when it comes to the scale of the issues that we're facing?
You know, I don't think we came to a sense of complacency. A lot of people have been doing a lot of hard work for a long time. I think what we're seeing now, though, is a sense of urgency that is really new. I mean, we're talking about wildfires across Colorado that are unprecedented, hurricanes surging into New York City. And our generation of activists and our generation generally is just ready to say no to fossil fuels and move to clean energy as quickly and as rapidly as possible. And I think we're going to stick with it. We have to stick with it. We have to see this through because it's our futures that are on the line.
But how are you going to do that when you've got all this new fossil fuel coming online in the U.S. right now? We've got economic issues here. People are desperate for jobs. They're desperate for cheap energy. And suddenly we've got it right here in this country. And maybe soon, with the State Department's kind of neutral stance on the Keystone Pipeline, I know there will be protests. I'm not writing them off. But a lot of people are thinking Obama may go ahead and approve that pipeline. Tar sands coming down. How do you get to clean energy? What kind of protest is it going to take or action is it going to take to get there?
Well, first of all, that pipeline's not getting built as far as we're concerned. Whether we have to kind of move right into that pipeline route and every single mile that thing's going to be built, be there with our bodies to stop it, we're going to do that. We're ready to stop that pipeline. Even if it's permanent, it's not getting built. But I still feel really confident that President Obama is going to listen to this generation. This generation has elected him twice now, and that he's going to reject this thing once and for all. It's his decision, not the State Department's decision, ultimately.
Emily Williams in California, they're talking about this as maybe the Selma of your generation, comparing it to the big, of course, civil rights landmark. Do you see the Keystone Pipeline ultimately being built? What do you see your cohort being prepared to do to stop it, Emily?
I don't see it being built. I completely agree with Maura in the way that
people will be there to stop at every single point. This is the key issue of our generation, and so we want to be sure that it doesn't happen. Especially out here, for instance, in Santa Barbara, California, we're not right in the path of the Keystone, and yet we can still offer support. There's a lot of people I work with out here who are very, very involved in action against the Keystone pipeline. And some of them are flying out even to stop it. We're ready to do protests. We're ready to have rallies. We're ready to show that this is not something we can stand for. After all, it's our future on the line.
One of the big news items of the past year concerned the fact that China, which we call Red China, exploded a nuclear bomb, which we called a device. Then Indonesia announced that it was going to have one soon, and proliferation became the word of the day. Here's a song about that. First we got the bomb, and that was good, 'cause we love peace and motherhood. Then Russia got the bomb, but that's okay, 'cause the balance of power's maintained that way. Who's next? France got the bomb, but don't you grieve, 'cause they're on our side, I believe. China got the bomb, but have no fears, they can't wipe us out for at least 5 years. Who's next? Then Indonesia claimed that they were gonna get one any day. South Africa wants two, that's right, one for the black and one for the white. Who's next? Egypt's gonna get one too, just to use on you know who. So Israel's getting tense, wants one in self-defense. The Lord's our shepherd, says the psalm, but just in case, we better get a bomb. Who's next? A Luxembourg is next to go, and who knows, maybe Monaco. We'll try to stay serene and calm when Alabama gets the bomb. Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? Who's next?
And now for something completely different.